Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the 28th day of March, 2024. Happy Thursday. Yeah, it's Thursday. Holy cow. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Derek Hunter Podcast. Check us out, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Going to be, I'm already angry about the Week in Effing Review, so it's going to be fun. You know, it's very un-Easterly. But, you know, it's the one day that Jesus was dead. So, good. He wouldn't have heard this. What's already brewing in my head is going to be lit. You might want to, if you're driving over to Grandma's house for Easter mutton, you probably don't want to listen to this one with the kids in the car. Although, they need to learn. Anyway, I haven't recorded it yet, but it's already shaping up in my head. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Sign up to win autographed book by Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida there, too. Certificate of authenticity, the whole shebang. It's legit. So thank you for that. Now let us get started with the program. There's, of course, a lot going on, a bunch of things to talk about, and updates on the bridge, and everybody's... there's no new updates on the bridge. There's nothing new. We don't know anything yet, and I don't think we're going to know anything. Power went out. They lost control of the ship. Maybe there's something more beyond that, but I'm seeing a whole bunch of things on social media where people are like, you know, there's hacking, blah, 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 conspiracy, blah, 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 false flag, this, that, and the other thing. And like, look, think the fact that this doesn't happen or hasn't happened more often is a bit of a miracle when you get down to it. You got a giant ass ship. Like, yes, of course, there are things there designed to protect the bridge, but this is a giant ship. All right? And sooner or later, they're just going to have to come up with another way or a better way, if you're really worried about these things, to get those giant freighters out of the bay. It's just how it works. It's how it's going to have to work. Will the disruptions be major? No. To the people in the area, yeah, they're going to have to go all the way around the water in order to get from one side to the other. Their trip to Costco from Dundalk is going to change dramatically. That sucks. But in general, very few lives were lost, and we're very lucky for that. The people who seem to have lost their lives were out there on the work crew filling potholes. And then you see, it was amazing. I watched a little bit of one of the press conferences, or maybe it was highlights of it. I don't remember if it was live or not. But there's Secretary Mayor Pete. There's the governor, Wesley Moore. Everybody calls him Wes because he wants to be cool, but it's Wesley. And his whole biography is a fraud, by the way, but that's all right. Doesn't matter. He's a Democrat, so he wins. And there was Kwesi Mfume, Democrat member of Congress from there. And they're all wearing these jackets. And I saw Mayor Brandon Scott, too, but he wasn't in this particular shot. They're all wearing jackets emblazoned with embroidery on the left breast pocket of whatever office or department it is they work for and they're representing there. Which means to me, you know, there's Secretary Mayor Pete. He's got Department of Transportation. He's got his Department of Transportation jacket on. He's got one of these things, maybe. Like, he's not rocking that every single day. He dresses like a normal human being. There's the governor. Oh, governor of Maryland, Wes Moore. Like, in case he forgets who he is, he can look down at it and go, oh, yeah, that's me. And then Kwesi Mfume was the congressional logo, but then it was the Congressional Black Caucus there, because he's got a double represent, right? Never miss an opportunity to play politics. But I'm watching this, and the only thing I could think, and maybe it's just a perversion of my mind, but the only thing I could think while watching this was, in the midst of an emergency, where presumably these people were awoken in the middle of the night with this horrible news, whilst getting ready to go to the scene of an ongoing unfolding emergency where they didn't know whether or not anybody was still alive in the water, they stopped to make a jacket choice that would convey their political position, that would let the people know, should they show up at a press conference, should they be on TV, should they be pictures of them in print or whatever, that there be no ambiguity as to who they are, because you have to take full advantage of the situation. And I thought, really? How deep into your closet do you have to dig if you're Kwesi Mfume to go, where's the Congressional Black Caucus one? This one's going to really help me. I mean, you're already going to win with 80% of the vote. So, like, honestly, is it just a routine emergency? Look, I hadn't washed my jacket, was all wrinkly. I'm running it through the dryer really quick. It's going to be an extra 20 minutes, but I'll be there. I swear, I just, you know, the embroidery wasn't popping, and I didn't want to look bad when advertising the Department of Transportation. How many jackets do you think these people have? One of these. They have a lot of jackets, but when it comes to an emergency, they've got their official uniform. So even as it's unfolding, they make sure to get out there. We've got to get that right jacket out there. We've got to make sure. I'm representing. But there is a lot of speculation. What's going to happen to the port? What's going to happen? And the bridge is in there. Honestly, the bridge shouldn't take all that long to get out of there. It just shouldn't. It's a cleanup crew. They're going to come in with cranes on ships and whip it out of there. Putting a new bridge up will take forever. They'll have to do environmental studies. They'll have to do all sorts of stuff. They won't just be able to put a bridge back up there. This isn't Florida. Florida, they had the bridge go out in the hurricane, and like 3 days later, they had a temporary bridge up there. They did not let anything stand in their way to make people's lives return to as quickly to normal as possible. Democrats don't work that way. They look at this as an opportunity. I'm surprised that as of yet, and it's still early on, that this hasn't somehow been blamed either on Donald Trump or climate change or the climate change caused by Donald Trump. You know it's only a matter of time. You know somebody at MSNBC, some intern, has been assigned to find a way to blame this on Donald Trump. Please, for the love of God, find a way. He's got to do. He's a monster. He must be blamed for this. Or climate change, but we'd prefer Trump. If you get a twofer, you'll get a raise. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is out there. You want to know how senile good old Joe is? He has to make himself the Forrest Gump of the American presidency. What do I mean by that? Well, if you saw the movie Forrest Gump, first of all, Forrest is a little on the dumb side, right? IQ below the threshold, let's just put it that way. But he's also everywhere. He was at all the historical events. He was a witness, an accidental witness to history. Joe Biden is a bull excrement witness to history. He inserts himself into every situation, regardless of, well, in spite of the fact that he knows it's not true. He's told the story many times about how he was not involved in the civil rights movement. Yet when he speaks to a group of black voters, he was right there with Martin Luther King. He tried to take the bullet for him. He did it all the time. That was it. He fought corn pop for justice or something, for racial equality, because he'd only fought white guys to that point, and it was just wrong. When speaking to Gold Star families, Bo Biden not only died in Iraq, he died a hero in Iraq. He died saving lives. Like, no, he was a lawyer in Iraq for 9 months. Nothing against it. He'd lawyers in the green zone in Iraq, but he wasn't grabbing a rifle and going out and going on patrol. That's not what the sons of vice presidents and the people over there as part of the JAG Corps do. But he changes his story. He was everywhere. He was arrested going. Now, this is the one that always cracked me up, because it was so stupid, and literally no other human being backs it up. Everybody says the opposite, as a matter of fact. Everybody was on the trip. Joe Biden says he was arrested trying to visit Nelson Mandela on Robin Island. He called it Robin's Island, but it's Robin Island. He was arrested in the airport in Soweto, I think it was. And I looked it up. It's like 3,000 miles from Robben Island. Johannesburg is right where Robben Island is. You can fly why would you fly 3,000 miles away to go and visit Nelson Mandela as part of a congressional delegate? What's a mystery for the ages since Joe Biden has sealed his congressional papers until about 10 years after he's dead? So he doesn't want people looking this up. He's evil. I was going to say evil, not stupid, but he's both. But, yeah. He got arrested because he was standing up for justice. No, he wasn't. He told to go through a separate whites-only entrance, South Africa, and he did it. He did it. That was it. Not arrested, not detained, pointed in a direction. That's it. But that morphed into, man, I nearly broke him out of prison. It was just this side of the Great Escape. So along those lines, with Joe Biden incapable of simply being a decent human being for more than 30 seconds at a time, he had to insert himself into the Baltimore Bridge story. He just had to. Maybe he thought it was a mid-level staffer. Who knows? But he had to insert himself into this story by coming up with some kind of connection. And this is what he came up with.
At about 1:30, a container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times, commuting from the state of Delaware in our trainer by car.
I've been over that bridge many, many, many times. Many, many, many times. Used to fish off that bridge as a kid. Me and my pa, he was sheriff of Mayberry. We used to go down there and fish off that bridge. We used to do this, that, and the other thing off that. But killed my first drifter by throwing him off that bridge. It was just super cool, that bridge, me. Except that bridge is a four-lane bridge. Was a four-lane bridge. Had no railroad tracks on it whatsoever. None. So that would be a pretty neat trick that he went over that by rail. Also, having lived up in Baltimore for 13 years, I had to look up where this bridge was. Because I don't know that I've ever driven across this bridge. Because it's out of the way. If you are commuting from Wilmington, Delaware to Washington, D.C., there would have to be major construction, to put it mildly, for you to go anywhere near the Francis Scott Key Bridge. In other words, it is highly unlikely, although in this case for Joe, it can't be disproven that he's ever driven across this bridge. And it certainly wasn't by train. That would have definitely made the news. But I don't believe he's ever been across this bridge. That little snippet there is 100% irrelevant to the story at hand. If you're going to try to console people who've lost loved ones, you don't say, well, yeah, I've been on that, I know that. You don't insert yourself into it. You're not needed. You're not needed there. But he has a compulsion to be the Forrest Gump of the presidency, to have been a part of everything, to be everywhere, to do everything, whatever it is. I've done that. I was there. I grew up poor in Scranton. Growing up in Scranton, he regales people with stories of growing up in Scranton when he left Scranton long before memories would have been forming in his head. Grew up middle class, poor. His family was actually wealthy. His idiot father got ripped off for a large chunk of the money, but they were not without. Remember when he told the story about 1960 or whatever, his father was dropping him off somewhere in Delaware, and he saw two men kissing? And he turns to his dad. Now, Joe's like 18 years old at this point. He turns to his daddy to try and figure out what's going on? What's happening to the world, daddy? And his dad was somehow the most progressive man on the Eastern Seaboard at the time. They love each other. They love each other, Joey. That's all it is. They just love each other. In reality, if anything like that had happened, the two of them would have probably gotten out of the car and beaten the hell out of them. Probably up until the 80s. Maybe the 90s. But everything about Joe Biden is a lie. Everything he tries to pull is a lie or pandering. And he announced yesterday that we, the taxpayers of America, are going to repay to build or pay to rebuild that bridge. We're going to cover it. Oh, but don't worry. We'll eventually go after the Singapore company that owns the ship that smashed into it. And but otherwise, we're going to pay for it all. It must be nice to have access to other people's credit cards, to just go on and go, whatever, I'll take that, and I'll take one of those. And you live your life like Michael Jackson. You just go through and point at stuff. I'm like, I want that, I want that, I want that, I want the other thing. You're racking up massive debt, and you go, I don't care. Cut that kid a settlement. Here's $25 million. Just do it. Get it taken care of. That's the life of a Democrat. That's the life of Joe Biden. Meanwhile, Secretary Mayor Pete's up there talking about infrastructure. He didn't mention the bridge being racist at all, which I guess it probably wasn't, although it was named after a white dude. He wrote a song the left considers racist, so it probably was racist and most likely had it coming. It was some sort of social justice thing. But they all tout how much money they've spent on infrastructure. Have you seen the improvements in your infrastructure wherever you happen to live? Are you seeing the potholes go away? Are you seeing the roads being resurfaced? Are you seeing things? I'll tell you, near where I live, they just spent about 3 days putting up on the underpass, on this bridge, freeway bridge above, putting up a whole bunch of 2x4 braces in the steel girders of the bridge underneath the concrete. Now, we just, what was the infrastructure bill? It was like a $1 trillion infrastructure bill. And we're putting up a lot of 2x4 squares with a brace across the center of it, diagonally, to hold up chunks of the bridge, to hold up chunks of the concrete. You watch these things. When you drive under bridges, there's a bridge in Virginia, just outside of D.C. It's right in Arlington, Virginia, right near Crystal City. If you're driving to Reagan National Airport or Crystal City or whatever, you and the GW Parkway, you can't help but see it. The undercarriage of the bridge, and it's a pretty high-ass bridge over a couple of other bridges, it's a mess there, is all wood. It's all these braces put up there to, I'd assume, aid the concrete. Now, good concrete wouldn't need aiding, right? A well-constructed bridge would not need 2x4s up there holding it up. As you drive under bridges the next couple of days, just take a look up as you're driving under. It's usually really nice, clean wood. It's not super exposed to the elements up there underneath the underpass, but it's kind of hidden. And you see it. You look up and you think, is that what we were promised? We're going to improve the infrastructure of this country? We are going to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure in this country? Were we told that we were going to buy 2x4s? How much does it cost to rebuild a bridge? If the steel girders are strong enough to support the concrete with the aid of 2x4s, then would not the steel girders be strong enough to support simply new, thicker, better grade concrete being poured over top of them? You pull out the old concrete, you lay down the whole. Shouldn't that be what they're doing? But no. Nope. They're just throwing up some wood up there. Real nice. But it's never temporary. It looks like, oh, they must be doing that temporarily. So it's never temporary. Some of these things have been up there for years. This is the fix. This is the infrastructure bill that we've gotten. Joe Biden will need Tommy John surgery from patting himself on the back so hard over finally getting an infrastructure bill passed, when in reality he has spent a whole bunch of our money on his green agenda friends, passed it off to a bunch of donors through their companies and government contracts, and the end result is wood underneath a bridge. Reminds me of when they were talking about welfare reform. And, oh, we can't do welfare. We can't save any money from welfare. Can't do anything about welfare. Can't do it. One out of every $5 the federal government spends on welfare. This was back in the 90s and early 2000s. I'm sure it's gotten worse. One out of every $5 they spend on welfare makes it to the actual recipient. What happens to the other four? Well, there's various layers of endless bureaucracy. Each one gets their beak wet. You need the administrator, the sub-administrator, the deputy sub-administrator, the person in the thing, blah, 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 all the way down to the point that they eat up four of every $5 spent so that finally you get a crumb at the end. You've got a whole huge bread factory, and you can't even get a sandwich at the end of it. That's how government works. So no matter what they spend on infrastructure, it's not going to change things. I almost said it's not going to be enough, but it's already too much. It is never going to change anything because everybody's getting their beak wet. It was never about the infrastructure. It was about the spending. The infrastructure is the peanut butter in which the pill is wrapped so that the dog will take it, so that we sit there and think, well, finally, at least we're going to do something about the roads. At least we're going to do something about our failing bridges. Yesterday at the press conference, Secretary Mayor Pete was talking about failing bridges and how many failing bridges we have in this country. Like, well, dude, you just got $1 trillion. Why are you not doing something about it? Well, you can only buy so many 2x4s at once, can't you? That seems to be the answer. We get wood, we get the splinters in our rear ends, and all these liberal donors and friends and companies and everybody on the left get rich. It's weird how that works, isn't it? All right, so we've got a Forrest Gump president. And we've got where to go next, because you're sitting there. I'll talk a little bit later about the mess over at NBC News again. But I saw this as a somebody who grew up in Michigan. You're looking at the news and you think, well, this is stupid. I tell you, stupidity spreads. You've got all these states spending money on illegal aliens. And you think, well, what do you expect? It's California. They want to pay for transgender surgery for illegal aliens. So be it. Let them do it. It's their money. Well, it's New York. They're giving money to illegal aliens. Let them do it. It's their money. That kind of stuff ain't going to fly out in middle America. That's them coastal elites. That's out. Not so much. Not so much at all. Out of Michigan, they have something called the Newcomer Rental Subsidy. Why? Because it's not about liberalism. It's about where Democrats have power. Wherever Democrats have power, they will impose their will. Whether or not the public wants it, whether or not the people want it, the people who scream the loudest about democracy, threats to our democracy, this is what democracy looks like, et cetera, are the people you have to fear the most, because they are the ones who are it is the person running the three-card Monty and running their mouths, who is the biggest threat to your wallet, right? If you get engaged with them, they will get your money. They will get it out. It's that simple. It's not the people keep being quiet. It's the people running their mouths. It's the people who don't, they scream about what leftists always do, what they accuse others of doing. Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, so we have to keep him off the ballot. Wait a second. If electing Donald Trump, if an election, if the end result of an election, how can that be a threat to democracy? Well, he's a monster. He's a dictator. Well, last time he left office, that was different. He'll never leave office this time. What are you basing that on? Just paranoia. Trying to appeal to your paranoia, desperately trying to steer. So whatever it is that they are screaming about to you is what you have to look out for, what you have to watch out for. The Democrats don't have your interests at heart. They don't have your interests in mind. They don't give a damn about you. So what is the newcomer rental subsidy in Michigan? Because Democrats have control. You think, well, this is what drives me nuts when you hear it's the Uniparty. The Uniparty this. There's really just one party. No, there are some people who are kind of worthless representatives, but there's not a Uniparty. There is not a Uniparty at all. There are distinct differences between the parties. You can find exemptions. You can find them really in the Republican Party, there's a diversity of opinion. On the Republican Party, there is almost uniformity on the Democratic side, except for, I will say, when it comes to John Fetterman and the border and Israel. Like, wow, he's now my favorite Democrat. It's amazing watching him go, yeah, no, you people are crazy. You people are anti-Semites, not going to play this game. Freaks them out. But wherever Democrats are and wherever they have control, they will bring destruction. They will force their will. They won't run on it. Gretchen Whitmer up there in Michigan did not run on elect me and I will pay illegal aliens $500 a month to help them cover their rent, which in most of the state of Michigan, you can do all right for $500 a month in rent. See, but if you are from Michigan, to hell with you. You get nothing. And I'm right here. It is Michigan.gov website. It's Michigan.gov. I could give you the whole thing, but if you just search the Michigan Newcomer Rental Subsidy, you'll find this website. You go to it and it says, the Newcomer Rental Subsidy Program provides refugees and other newcomer population eligible households. Now, isn't that lovely? Other newcomer, they're new, and they're capitalizing newcomer in the middle of a sentence, just like they capitalize black now. They don't capitalize white, but they capitalize black because they need to separate. Look, we're taking care of you. We've got you. You're a distinct group. The other side is evil. They're not worthy of capitalization. Newcomers. Other newcomer population eligible households with rental assistance up to $500 per month for up to 12 months with eligibility based on immigration status and household income. You can't be an American citizen. You can't be a Michigander. You can't be, we're not interested in you. Screw you. We'll help other people. And then there's the applications. Now, it's weird. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different links for applications. You can apply online because why would you be expected to get off your ass and go anywhere to apply for $500 a month, right? What kind of monster would require anybody to leave their house to go and take $6,000 of other people's money to help cover their living expenses? When part of the requirement to emigrate to the United States is the ability to take care of yourself, to cover your own nut, that's just gone the way of the dodo. So what are the online applications? They're in different languages. That's right, different languages, 7 different languages. Arabic, for one. Well, that's weird. A lot of Arabic speakers coming across the southern border? Yes, actually. Then there's Dari. I don't even know what the hell Dari is. D-A-R-I. Then there's Haitian Creole, getting ahead of the curve there. No, because Haitians have been fleeing that prison hell island forever. Not sure why they're our responsibility. You really want to send them to France. France is the one who screwed them up. Actually, their own corruption screwed them up. But they were a French colony, not an American colony. Get them the hell out of here. We don't need them. Then, I don't even know what, Kinyarwanda? Is that what they speak in Wakanda? I don't know what the hell that is. Kinyarwanda. That's right. They're ready for you. $500 a month up there in Michigan, if that's your language. Pashto, Spanish, and Ukrainian. Wow. Yeah, the entire bouillabaisse of what's coming across the southern border. They're willing to give you $500 a month up in Michigan. And I lived in Michigan when I was obviously with my parents. Didn't pay rent until after high school, and that was only $10 a month. They kept it and gave it back to me when I moved out. But I had to come up with something. But I was one apartment was $550, but that was a 2-bedroom. So, and then the 1-bedroom was $425. Now, this is a while ago. But that was also right in Dearborn, right there on the Detroit border. Good access, nice neighborhoods. You could have, I guess the house I grew up in, they were getting or wanting, is it $1,500 a month for rent? But you get away from the Detroit metro area, you can live all right on $500 a month for rent and assistance, and then you just come up with, all you got to do is, sell a little bit of drugs on the side, engage in some human trafficking, whatever, and you can do just fine. The website says many refugees and other newcomers face critical housing challenges, and this program will increase access to better and more affordable housing opportunities while supporting a more rapid social integration to refugees and other newcomer populations to Michigan. Meaning they don't plan on getting rid of them. They don't want to get rid of them. Democrats never want to get rid of them. That's how it works. They have no plan in getting rid of these people, no matter what ultimately happens legislatively, legally. It doesn't matter. They don't want them gone. They will not be gone. The Democrats need them. The Democrats demand them. That brings us just over the river and through the woods to Virginia. Senator Tim Kaine down there was interviewed by local media yesterday, talking about immigration. He said, don't think about it in terms of people coming over here. Think of it in terms of job. Think of it as this. Think of it as that. Think of it as the other thing. They are not interested in getting rid of these people. They are not interested in anything related to our sovereignty or our laws. Listen to them for yourself.
Does that change your mind or what you guys are going to do moving forward, looking at kind of this illegal immigration and border crisis that we have going on?
It needs to. I wish if people, when they hear immigration, I think a lot of people, the first thing they think of is the border. The first thing we should think of is workforce. National security and border issues are really important. And some of the chaos at the border is because if you don't have a robust work visa program, then people who are desperate for opportunities come and they'll make an asylum claim instead.
Yeah, no, wait, you're admitting that these people are making bogus asylum claims. No, just come on, you gotta let them in here for work. Now, again, I'm going to point out a couple of things here. Democrats insist that Social Security isn't a Ponzi scheme. Yet, they are all but telling you flat out that they want open borders and welcome in the entire third world because we need more people working. We need more workers in order to support Social Security and Medicare. That seems a little bit weird for a Ponzi scheme. Ponzi schemes always need more people coming in, right? Social Security was a pretty good Ponzi scheme in that the sunset date, the date in which it was going to collapse on itself, was pushed off a long way down. Eligibility age was 65. Life expectancy was 63. I've covered before how that number was a little bit misleading because infant mortality kept the number down. But people weren't living as long as they are now, even then, so there's that. But there were also, 14 people working for every person on retirement? So it was easily manageable, that Ponzi scheme. Now we're at about 2-1. It's going to dip below 2-1 soon as more boomers. See, the World War II generation came back from saving the world and wanted to get it on. And they had a lot of kids. And suddenly, those people, those boomers, didn't have as many kids. So there's this big bloat in the middle of people who are going to overwhelm the system. Again, if it weren't a Ponzi scheme, if they say, it's not a Ponzi scheme, everybody pays into it. If everybody pays into it, what they got out, or anywhere close to what they got out, and the government hadn't raided that money and spent it already, then it would be no problem. But I would point out that as these Democrats congratulate themselves on the stock market, they are the very people who prevented you from taking 2.5% of your Social Security money and investing it in the stock market, right? The stock market's doing great. I don't know what everybody's complaining about. Well, Democrats prevented all Americans from having the option to invest in the stock market. That's what people are complaining about. You swore up and down there was no crisis in Social Security. Didn't need any help. And so you blocked it. You kept the system the same. And now they're saying we need more workers into this country. Well, we've got low unemployment. If Social Security were not a Ponzi scheme that required a whole bunch of people working compared to the number of people retired, and we have 3.5% unemployment, we should be doing all right on the Social Security front, but we're not doing all right on the Social Security front because it is a Ponzi scheme. It is. So just keep in mind that these people are lying to you constantly about everything, every damn thing there is to lie about. None of it is by accident. These people aren't stupid. They're evil. There's a huge, huge difference. Not only Michigan, and you name the liberal-controlled state, and they're handing out rights, privileges, money to anybody and everybody they possibly can. Right here, the New York Post. New York City Council asks state's highest courts to allow non-citizens to vote in local elections. Huh, that's weird. New York City Council asked the state's highest court to strike down a pair of rulings in a move that would pave the way for non-citizen immigrants to vote in city elections. The controversial election change passed by the City Council in late 2021 was signed into law by then-Mayor Bill de Blasio and would allow 800,000 non-citizens with green cards to vote, but was struck down as unconstitutional last month by an appellate court. See, you are not their priority. You are not the priority of the left. And while you got the mayor up there talking a good game about, we're going to be broke, we need help, we need this, we need that, we need the other thing, he's telling a different story. Again, New York Post, New York City begins handing out prepaid debit cards to migrants in controversial program. It's a controversial program. You're a sucker if you live in New York. Honestly, you are a sucker if you live in New York. The Adams administration, Mayor Adams, oh my God, we're going broke. We need your help, federal government. The Adams administration launched its program to give prepaid debit cards to New York City migrants this week, 2 months after inking the controversial no-bid $53 million contract for the deal. $53 million. We need help. Staffers with the New Jersey company Mobility Capital Finance handed out 8 preloaded MasterCards at the Roosevelt Hotel on Monday as part of the pilot program that will expand to 115 cards by next week, according to City Hall spokesperson. The one-year deal came under fire after the Post first revealed the contract was inked without a typical bidding process. The program could be a boon for the tech startup, giving it the potential to net $1.8 million by taking a cut of the funds located onto each MasterCard, according to the contract. See, I told you, money gets the beak wet. Everybody along the line gets their beak wet. They're like the mafia. Everybody takes a piece of the action. The administration scaled back the original plan, which would have loaded up the cards with a month's worth of money for food and baby supplies. Cash will now need to be replenished each week. Oh, isn't that sweet? Wait, if they can't be trusted with getting all the money at once, why should they be trusted to getting the money every week? The Post was unable to track down any of the migrant families who received the cards Monday. Even the staffers at the Roosevelt Hotel said they weren't aware that the cash had been handed out, because they're not going to spend it where they live. They're going to spend it on themselves in ways that will be wildly stupid and frustrating. I bet you that the taxpayers of New York City are paying for tattoos, for example. The pilot program will cover about 460 out of the 65,000 migrants in the city as the city hall evaluates its success. Don't you love it? It's not enough. It'll keep it a pilot program as long as possible. It's only 460 people. Are there 460 Americans who are just being shoveled cash? No, of course not. Of course not. And they'll say, we can expand it now. Let's double that. Let's double that again. It's not a big enough sample. We need even more. We need even more, and it will remain a pilot program as it goes into full effect. Quote, the cost-saving measure will replace the city's current system of providing non-perishable food boxes to migrant families staying in hotel, much of which is often discarded. Adams spokeswoman Kayla Mamalek said. I want to read that quote part again so it sinks in, so you really see what's going on. Quote, the cost, they're calling giving them money a cost-saving measure. This cost-saving measure will replace the city's current system of providing non-perishable food boxes to migrant families staying in hotels, much of which is often discarded. They're putting them up in hotels, which in Manhattan ain't cheap. They're spending a ton of money on that. But they're also giving them boxes of food, canned goods, dry goods, things like that. Not, you know, fruit and vegetables that'll go rotten or meat that'll go rotten, things that will last. And it says, much of which is often discarded, which means you give these starving, struggling people who are morally superior than in every way. They're giving them food and they're disproving the old adage, beggars can't be choosers. Like the beggars say, beggars can't be choosers. And the beggars go, yeah, just watch me. Now, in a just society, first of all, you wouldn't be taking in all these illegal aliens. You just had Tim Kaine, senator from Virginia, admitting that they are not, in fact, legitimate asylum seekers. They want to come here to work, but they bring nothing to the table. But they want to come in anyway, and so they recognize that they can easily game the system. All you got to do that is to claim, oh, I need asylum, I'm too scared. Like, oh, all right, come on in, and it'll be 6 years before we adjudicate your case. At which point, a liberal Democrat judge will say, well, it's been too long. You've been here too long. We will let you stay, because you don't have a legitimate asylum claim, but it would be cruel to send you back now after this long being in the country. They admit they're here under false pretenses, yet the left is shoveling money at them. More and more and more money. And when you give them food, these starving people go, well, this is all you got? Reminds me of the junkies I used to feed at Union Station in Washington, D.C. when I was working at the Heritage Foundation. They'd have big events, public events, and they'd provide Subway sandwiches to everybody afterwards. Now, these weren't footlongs or anything. These were they were probably footlongs, but cut up into four pieces. They're small little pieces, couple bites per sandwich. But at the end of each event, they always had way more food than they needed. They'd put it out for staff. After staff had picked over it, or a lot of times people went to Subway, and it wasn't usually put out till like 2 o'clock for staff, so people could go and get the hell out of there and go get their own food. So I would go in with a Ziploc bag, and I would take it home, lunch meat. right? I could make an omelet with the lunch meat. I could remake a sandwich with the lunch meat, whatever it is. So sometimes I'd walk out of there with 2 gallon Ziploc bags, sometimes 3 gallon Ziploc bags full of Subway sandwiches that I'd take over to the MARC train to ride back to Baltimore. And he'd always come up with some junkie over at Union Station going, help me get some food. Let me get blah, blah. And he'd go, no, I don't have any money to give any food. But you know what? Here's a gallon Ziploc bag full of sandwiches. You can take the next 2 days off of begging for food anyway and be fine. And sometimes they'd go, oh, thanks, kind of confused, kind of taken aback. But sometimes they'd go, I don't want that. I'm sorry that it upset your wonderful cleansed palate, your refined palate there. God forbid Subway touched the lips of a guy who last thing to touch it was a crack pipe. I apologize unreservedly. I apologize to not only you, but the bugs currently crawling all throughout your hair. I'm sorry for daring to offend you. Well, they just look at you like, I can't smoke that. What the hell am I going to do with that? They just want the money. The illegal aliens, they're so starving. They're so. And they look and they go, I don't want, what is this, macaroni and cheese? Hell no. I'm not going to eat that. I'd rather starve to death. But the point is, they're not starving to death. They're not starving to death. It's a myth. These people, oh, they need all the help in the world. They're working mostly for the cartels, to be honest with you. It's how it works. We're putting them up, and the cartels are getting them to traffic human beings, traffic drugs, whatever. But they don't give a damn. Democrats don't give a damn about you. I cannot impress that upon you enough. The people who scream, this is what democracy looks like, and Donald Trump is a meanie bumbleini when it comes to the blah, blah, blah. Spare me. He is not a threat to democracy. The people who are decrying threats to democracy, screaming about threats to democracy, they are the ones undermining our democracy. We go to the Hill newspaper today. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman and the most appropriately named man in the Senate, I added that last bit, Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, and Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, and 17 Democrats sent a letter to President Biden on Tuesday asking his administration to, quote, take all available action, end quote, to speed up the process for granting lawful status to migrants who have come to the country illegally. Please, Mr. President, dig around and find that magic pen and magic phone that Barack Obama had. Just make something up whole cloth. Bypass the democratic system. Act as a dictator. I thought Donald Trump was the dictator. And here they are insisting and urging Joe Biden to act like a dictator. It's so weird. It's almost like these people are hypocrites. The senators urged Biden to swiftly provide administrative, quote, relief. Relief, yes. To hundreds of thousands of immigrants to protect them from the threat of deportation if President Trump returns to office. Again, who is the threat to democracy here? It is the people who are doing everything they can to subvert the democratic process, right? Isn't that how it works? Quote, over 1.1 million U.S. citizens are married to an undocumented immigrant, and roughly 4.9 million U.S. citizen children, have at least one undocumented parent. Deporting all such individuals, as former President Trump has threatened to do if reelected, would devastate the American economy and destroy American families, the senators wrote in a letter. People are free to go back where they with their family member. And if you remove the asinine concept that was created whole cloth by Ted Kennedy in the 70s of birthright citizenship, then you don't have to worry about those sweet, sweet, nourishing children and their parents. Right? Right? Now, there was a time when I would have been like, oh, I don't want to do that. And if they can prove that they are productive members of society and blah, 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 blah. But it's to the point now that I no longer have any dams left to give. I just don't. Well, I wouldn't prioritize these people to be deported. I certainly would lord it over them. Keep them in line. They may get deported last, but only if the rest of the program to reassert our sovereignty goes on without a hitch. The senators pointed out that undocumented immigrants contributed an estimated $9.7 billion to federal and state taxes and more than $11 billion in Social Security contributions in 2019 alone. Oh, okay. Yes, we broke into your home and stole your stuff, but once we sold it, we stimulated the local economy. What more do you want? Quote, these families live in fear that they may be separated from their loved ones due to deportation and often forego much-needed health care and decline to report crimes due to their immigration status, they wrote. They have no proof of that, by the way. There's no data to back that up in any way, shape, or form, and you would be hard-pressed to name one healthcare system in the country, meaning all the hospitals and doctors and everything, that would look at somebody's immigration status and go, we need to call ICE. We need to call ICE right now. This person is in this country illegally. We'll triage them. We'll stop the bleeding, but we need to get ICE here ASAP, lest they get away. That doesn't happen. Most of these people live in liberal areas, which are sanctuary jurisdictions. Expressly forbid this sort of thing. You report a crime, they're not going to ask you at all for your citizenship status. If you're not reporting a crime, it's more than likely because if Democrats suddenly are upset about people not reporting crimes, maybe they should look at their Democrat prosecutors who are, in fact, refusing to prosecute people. Therefore, people are not bothering to report certain crimes. Because why would you? What's the point? Why waste the time? But doing that allows them to go, well, look, crime is down. Crime is down. It's amazing. And I love how they're paying taxes. That's literally the least they could do. All right? They're breaking the law by being here. They broke the law by entering here. They're more than likely, in all honesty, since they're saying, well, it contributed more than $11 billion in Social Security contributions alone. Well, Dick Durbin, his name, take it up with his parents. they must have been able to see into the future. Some babies you can just look at and know. But if they're contributing $11 billion to Social Security per year, that would mean that they're working in this country. Since they are in this country illegally, they do not have Social Security numbers. Am I right? I believe I'm right about that. If you're in the country illegally, we have not yet begun to hand out Social Security numbers to people who crawl under razor wire. That means that they've stolen somebody else's identity, right? That means that while they may be working under somebody else, they could screw up their taxes unbelievably. It could screw up all sorts of things about that. They are actively in the midst of continually repeating identity theft. Yet there is no such concern for that. If you remember back to, what was that? It was 2007, maybe 2000. It was, the Democrats were in charge. 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. Maybe, no, might have been in the Obama administration, but whatever. The last time the Gang of Six, whatever, John McCain was still alive, and they were talking about giving amnesty to all the illegal aliens. They wanted to make them legal. During what was called a markup, as always, bad ideas always come from the Senate when it comes to immigration. During the markup, which was the actual writing of the text and the committee and the adding of amendments and whatnot, I forget who it was, but one Republican senator offered an amendment that simply said, rather basically, in order to apply for and be granted amnesty, to be granted the green card, illegal aliens had to inform the federal government of all the fake identities under which they've worked, meaning the Social Security numbers, the names, everything, that they worked if they'd worked under things. Why? Because they've committed identity theft, and it would have been a good opportunity for the federal government to try and make people right. There are probably a lot of people who owed taxes on revenues and incomes that they did not actually earn, that these illegal aliens did, because they stole their Social Security number. And guess what Democrats did with that amendment in the committee? They voted it down. They voted it down unanimously. Chuck Schumer, in fact, lectured about how this would cause many of these illegal aliens to not come forward, to not claim the amnesty, because they'd have to, even though there would be no charges against them. It was amnesty in the purest sense. They would be allowed to have gotten away with that identity theft, that it would have caused many of them to not come forward for fear of being held accountable by the law. Meaning, once again, Democrats were getting what they wanted in this legislation, amnesty for illegals. Yet all they had to do was just a little bit of looking out for Americans, helping people whose lives have been turned upside down by identity theft. Go to their creditors, go to the IRS, go to whomever and say, aha, see, it wasn't me, it was this illegal alien. And Democrats uniformly, like a chorus of devils straight from hell, said no in harmony, uniformly, and without question. Who is the priority? The Hill. Senators specifically asked Biden to take administrative action to speed up the processing of green card applications for undocumented immigrants who are married to U.S. citizens, noting they face significant processing delays. Please help certain people who've broken the law. Please, for the love of God, change the law. Bend over backwards, or in this case, bend us over forwards, in order for us to help people who break our laws, lest they be held accountable by the next administration. Again, are Democrats prioritizing you? Do you feel prioritized by Democrats? Throwing money at you like you're strippers and you're a rapper at the strip club? Like, hey, are they throwing money at you? No, they're throwing money at illegal aliens. They're just throwing your money at illegal aliens. So, yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on what it is that Democrats do to favor the illegal aliens. Whatever it is, you can count on that they'll do it. Actually, let me just see. I don't speak any of these languages, but is there an English application? Well, that's, I guess, one of 10 pages. Make sure you're... The application is not super complicated when it comes to applying for that money from Michigan or the state of New York or the city of New York. So realistically, we should probably spend some time this weekend contemplating driving up to New York City and seeing if we... Since you can't prove that you're an illegal alien, all you got to do is find somebody, if anybody knows anybody who works at the company in New Jersey... Actually, I'm kidding. It's New York City. They're already ripping it off. My God. They're already ripping it. All that money's gone. God, it's just good. But if you look at eligibility for the Michigan subsidy, a beneficiary must have an eligible immigration status as defined by the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which includes refugees, asylees, special immigrant visas, victims of human trafficking, Cuban Haitian entrants, Afghan nationals, Ukrainian humanitarian parolees. Other immigration statuses include individuals who arrived under the Cuban, Haitian, Nicaraguan, and Venezuelan program, individuals who arrived under the family reunification parolee process for El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Colombia, individuals with pending asylum application, and other immigrant individuals on a case-by-case scenario. See how they slip that stuff in at the end? Oh, it's very specific. These people and these people and these people. And then individuals with pending asylum applications. That's literally every human being who marches across the southern border, no matter where in the world they're from. That's it. You're going, I need asylum. Oh, okay. Well, here you go. Here's a court date, and now your case is pending. We'll see you in a decade. You then qualify for this. And then just in case, I don't know, maybe you came in from Canada or you overstayed a visa or whatever it is, they had to throw in and other immigrant individuals on a case-by-case scenario. So the last part is my favorite because this is how government works. We're laying out very strict guidelines under which these things are, and then at the end we're saying, but we can scrap them at any point should we decide to. It's all good. Oh, okay. What is that? Eligibility and household income. Applicants must be renting individuals or households who are experiencing housing instability. Well, housing instability, what the hell does that mean? It means nothing, but it means everything because it can mean anything. Housing instability. When you pay your mortgage or your rent every month, do you feel completely okay? Are you worried about, okay, we made it this month. Hope we can make it next month. Don't you feel that way? Hell, I feel that way. Just going, man, I made it a little bit of breathing room. All right, no, now we've got 30 days to come up with something, 30 days of holding your breath. It must be under 85% of the federal poverty limit or live in qualified census tract area, meaning you live in a poor neighborhood. You can make all the money you want as long as you live in a poor neighborhood. Or have an income at or below 60% of area median income and receive any... Wait a second. 60% of the area median income. So if you live in a really nice neighborhood, I'm just spitballing here. This is the first time I'm reading it too. If you live in a really expensive neighborhood where a lot of people are, but there just happens to be some Democrat built some Section 8 housing or whatever, you're squatting or whatever it is, and everybody makes a lot of money, as long as you only make 60% of what they make, you can qualify for this. Because it's each one of these is an or. It's an or. And you receive any of the following federal assistance: temporary assistance for needy families, supplemental nutrition assistance programs, free and reduced lunch and or school breakfast programs, Medicare Part D low-income subsidies, supplemental security income, Head Start and or early Head Start, special supplemental nutrition programs for women, infants, and children, low-income home energy assistance program, or Pell Grants. That's a hell of a wide berth. As long as you're getting your beak wet from the government teat, you qualify for this. You could have just arrived. You could have been here forever. You could live in a slummy neighborhood. You could live in a really nice neighborhood, as long as you're just living, you know, if you live above your means, they'll help you out. It is how governments work. This is how democratic governments work. Meanwhile, these people are telling you that Donald Trump, you, anybody who disagrees with them, threats to democracy, threats to democracy. Meanwhile, I'm going to play you this Dr. Tedros. He is the head of the World Health Organization. He's one of those people, while I don't revel in saying this, there are just certain people, professions, politicians, political class, who, if you were to see them choking in a restaurant, it would no doubt be on a nice, big, juicy, medium, rare steak. But if you saw them choking, you'd go, should I? This is even horrible to say. I'll admit that it's horrible to say, but it would cross my mind. You go, is it, should I? Should I give the Heimlich maneuver? Should I do that? The answer is yes, you probably should. But still, you know, still. Anyway, this is a couple of months old, but it was the first I'd heard of it, and it is really kind of amazing to me that this didn't make more news, that this didn't make a bigger stink, because it is a non-governmental agency that has nothing to do with anything in this country. Really, they've dropped the ball unbelievably so when it came to COVID. And yet they are still trying to dictate terms for our lives. Dr. Tedros basically wants to make you become a grazer, to eat plants. And now there's no concern about the carbon footprint of all the illegal aliens pouring across the southern border. No concern about the damage to human beings done by the opioid crisis. None of that. Hell, the president of Mexico on 60 Minutes said that it was our fault, really. And there's a case to be made that we share some of the blame, but Mexico could certainly do a whole hell of a lot. We have the demand side over here. Mexico could help on the supply side if we work on the demand. But we have to work on both sides because Mexico is actively aiding the supply side. How dare, what are you saying? That because the Mexican government is corrupt. It's a third world hellhole where the political class is wealthy and everybody else is poor and living in fear of the cartels who really run the countryside. That's it. The only areas that are remotely safe are the tourist areas, because that's where the government gets its beak wet, and the government has then ceded the rest of the country to the cartels to be able to human traffic, drug traffic, and whatever else traffic up through there. That's how I can say that. They're more than welcome to prove me wrong, but they can't. They won't, because they know. Anyway, listen to Dr. Tedros tell you that he, for the good of the planet, people like him have to tell you how to live and what to eat.
Our food systems are harming the health of people and planet. Food systems contribute to over 30% of greenhouse gas emissions and account for almost one-third of the global burden of disease. Transforming food systems is therefore essential by shifting towards healthier, diversified, and more plant-based diets. If food systems delivered healthy diets for all, we could save 8 million lives per year. WHO is committed to supporting countries to develop and implement policies to improve diets and fight climate change. I'm therefore very pleased that over 130 countries have signed the COP28 UAE Declaration on climate and health. Together, we can protect and promote the health of both people and planet.
Now you just go out this weekend and you graze in your backyard. Go ahead and do it. That's Tedros Adhanom, I don't even know, I'm not even going to, G-H-E-B-R-E-Y-E-S-U-S. I'd spell it with seven letters starting with A, and then there'd be a couple of, never mind. You can figure it out. But he can go and chase himself for all I care. He's 59 years old, Ethiopian, not a medical doctor, but he's the head of the World Health Organization anyway. Why? Because he's a China suck-up, and China wanted him in over there. And then China unleashed COVID, and Tedros, being the good dog that he is and recognizing that you never bite the hand that controls you, ran blocker for China. Because why? Because that's what they do. He has no concern about the disease pouring across the southern border, the measles. Diseases we thought we'd eradicated. And actually, no, that's the wrong way to put it. Diseases we had eradicated in this country, pouring back across the southern border. No, the World Health Organization is no concern about that. They're concerned with how much delicious cow you eat, because cows fart. And they want to control that. Eat more of a plant-based diet. It's about control, of course. It's always about control. You will find people who need to be controlled. It's a failure of our education system in this country. that there are so many people. It's weird. You used to say you go to college. That's where the free exchange of ideas really forms you as an adult. Now it is absolute conformity. It is a cookie cutter that they just cram everybody into. This is the shape you're allowed to be. Here's your spandex unitard. And how dare you question anything else? It used to be question authority. Now it's question, comma, authority? No way. Don't do it. Obey. Obedience. Well, I have an example of that. You can tell Tedros he can go chase himself. At Vanderbilt University, the students have taken over the president's office at Vanderbilt University. Now, keep in mind, everybody you're going to hear chanting and whining and complaining and then yelling at a black police officer that he's an Uncle Tom because he supports what he's not supporting marginalized people around the world. They're all wearing masks. This is new, and they're all wearing masks. That'll tell you the level of genius that Vanderbilt University, which charges somewhere in the neighborhood, I think, of $48,000 a year. That's the level of genius that they're coming out with, that they're churning out there at Vanderbilt University. But they are protesting genocide in Gaza, is what they call it, what they say. It's kind of hilarious. These people have no idea what in the hell they're talking about. It's 100,000 dead. It's 30,000 dead. It's this. It's that. It's the other thing. They don't know. They don't care. Ask them what any of the slogans they chant are, what they mean, where they come from, what the message is. They won't have any idea. It's the antisocial event of the season, and these people are, through social media, content to be led around by the short and curlies to do whatever it is. If it's white, it's wrong. If it's Jewish, it's evil. And regardless of what, well, they'll all use their iPhones to spread it. They'll all run home to get the latest updates on what to think from Rachel Maddow. And go, no, this is perfectly fine. This is perfectly fine. This is insane and asinine, but this is who these people are. But you want to know what the perfect, what makes the perfect leftist, it is this.
And the police officers are standing by like puppets.
Shame on you!
Puppets!
Even Jack.
A-cat.
Yeah. Who wants to meet you? Not Jack. You're protecting a terrible man. Too. I hope you know that. You're protecting a terrible man.
And a coward, too.
And a coward, an absolute coward, who is aiding and abetting a actual genocide. 30,000 people are being killed, sir.
That's what you're protecting.
Show your compassion. Show your morality.
What if it was your kids?
Mm. Would you care?
It will be your kids. It will be our kids. You think kids gonna protect you?
This is a job worth it, sir? Is a job worth it?
Hey, you're Black Sword. We're already dealing with this. You can stand.
32,000 dead, and you don't care.
You could stand with us right now and be on the right side of history.
But you won't.
Shame on you! Shame on you!
Shame!
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 You are black in America, and you're not standing with the marginalized people of the world. What does that make you? What does that make you? A coward!
Coward!
Shame!
Shame! Free, free Palestine!
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 Yeah, that's the president of the university, Dearmeyer. There, you got to. Those people remind me of every bitchy theater dude I've ever known in my life. You don't know who you are. Do you understand that? You are committing genocide. You are enabling genocide. How dare you enable genocide? You're the monster. You're the problem. You're the problem. Nope. Don't even talk to me. You're the monster. You're the monster. No, I've got to go rehearse for Brigadoon, but I'll be back later to tell you how you're a monster. All right. Nobody knows oppression like a wealthy suburbanite white boy like me. I'll tell you. It's just horrible. 30,000 people have died. You're literally supporting genocide. Well, that's not how genocide works at all. But let's talk about genocide because there is some data available that really makes an interesting case about genocide and the Jews, those evil Jews. Jewish population from 1948 versus 2023 in Egypt. There used to be 63,550 Jews living in Egypt. Currently, according to the latest data, there are three. Syria went from 40,000 to zero. So there you go. Iran, there's still 8,500 Jews living in Iran, poor bastards, but they used to have 100,000. You go down the, there's Tunisia, there's Libya, you name it. It is down to single digits in most of these places. But then genocide, all right? You want to talk about, that's ethnic cleansing right there that I told you. This is not ethnic cleansing. 1948, Arabs in Israel. There were 156,000 of them, according to the United Nations. In 2023, there are 2.1 million of them living in Israel. How is that? Wow, that's the, somebody needs to explain to somebody what genocide is. And then Arabs in Gaza. There were 80,000 in 1948. Now there are 2 million in 2023. Again, what is it a genocide of? Is it an orgy genocide? Is it a reproductive? I don't think genocide means what these morons think it means. Shift gears a little bit to the NBC News story of Ronna McDaniel. I really think Ronna McDaniel is going to be, she has a great lawsuit because these people attacked her personally, the people, all everybody at MSNBC, everybody dogpiled on her. Morning Joe's like, we're not going to have her on this show. Well, if your boss has told you to have her on the show, would you have had her on the show? No, we will not. At some point, somebody's, if I'm a shareholder in Comcast, I'm a little pissed off today. This is damaging to the brand. They own NBC. They own MSNBC, NBC News. This is damaging to the brand. They have directly let the lunatics run the asylum. And you sit there and you go, then what are we paying management for? What are we paying leadership for? If at any point steerage can stand up and overrun the dining room, then what's the point of paying for first class? What's the point of having leadership if that leadership, the second there is any complaints from the working people, they just go, oh, okay, whatever. We're not dealing with, you know, people in the coal mines here, by the way. We're dealing with people who are paid millions upon millions of dollars every year for sitting on their ass and lying to a dwindling audience. And they go, oh, no, no, we couldn't possibly afford to upset Chris Hayes. What if Nicole Wallace doesn't like us anymore? Well, she'll cheat on you then, like she did her first husband, I suppose. But that's the world that we live in now. New York Times a few years ago and Senator Tom Cotton during the summer of BLM Antifa riots wrote, hey, we should probably send in the military to restore order in these cities, not to gun people down, but to restore order in these cities as liberals are and the Democrats are encouraging their flank to destroy them. They ran that on the opinion pages of the New York Times, and the New York Times reporter said, this is ridiculous. This, somehow they couldn't really express why. They didn't have to express why. Put black New York Times employees' lives in danger. Why, how? They didn't. You don't have to say. You can just declare something to be, and it is on the left. And that's good enough. That's good enough. You just declare it to be. Well, these very same people declared Ronna Romney McDaniel to be a monster, a liar, a fraud. Jen Psaki's out there pointing a finger. She's lying. Like, okay. Tell us again. You tweeted right before the 2020 election that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. That wasn't true. Are you apologizing for that? No, nothing you say is true. If she tells you the time, fact check it. But that's okay. Rachel Maddow, huge conspiracy theorist. If you get the shot, the vaccine, the virus dies with you. Donald Trump was installed by Russia. He's a Putin. All this stuff. Everything was a lie. She didn't just say it once. It wasn't a one-time monologue on a random Tuesday. It was a mantra for her. But that doesn't matter. Ronna McDaniel must be destroyed because she's too closely associated with Donald Trump. She has to be made to pay. Well, hopefully these people will be made to pay for their slander of Ronna McDaniel, because not only did they cost her the money that MSNBC was going to pay her, there comes a lot of ancillary money with that. You get book deals because you know you can promote the book on the network that you're on. You get speaking engagements. You get all kinds of things from this. You get that cable news deal. If you're smart, you can milk it. Well, if you have it stripped, now that's gone from McDaniel. You may not care. And personally, my fate is not in any way, shape, or form tied to the financial fortunes of Ronna McDaniel, which I'd assume she was doing all right beforehand. But anything that can make these leftists pay, that can punish them, even a little bit, I'm in favor of. I'm just old-fashioned that way. I want to go scorched earth on these people every chance we get. So what happened? Yesterday, we have Ari Melber here. Ari Melber seems like one of the more sane people over there, but you know what? When everybody's eating paste, the kid who eats boogers seems a little... or everybody's eating boogers, the kid who's eating paste, it seems a little more sane. He's still eating paste, still a bit of problematic, but he does seem like the more rational of the irrational lunatics over there. He made the official announcement. I could read you the statement. It's just much easier to give it to you in real time as it happened.
NBC News leadership has announced that former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor. We have a new email and update that's come out just within this hour. So this is sort of breaking news here within our organization on a story that has garnered significant attention and criticism. And what I'm going to do now, to be very clear, is read the entire update from NBC Universal News Group Chairman Cesar Conde. He has written in this new email, quote, "There's no doubt that the last several days have been difficult for the news group. After listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you, I have decided that Ronna McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor." He goes on to write that no organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that disappointment undermines that goal. The news chairman continues to say, quote, "I want to personally apologize to our team members who felt we let them down. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team, I approved it and take full responsibility for it," says Cesar Conde, the chairman. He explains, quote, "Our initial decision was made because of our deep commitment to presenting our audiences with a widely diverse set of viewpoints and experiences, particularly during these consequential times." And then, in closing, this message, which, again, is brand new, we're airing it for the first time here on MSNBC, having come out this hour, quote, "We continue to be committed to the principle that we must have diverse viewpoints on our programs, and to that end, we will redouble our efforts to seek voices that represent different parts of the political spectrum," end quote. If you watch MSNBC, as you probably do if you're listening to me right now, or you follow news media and politics, this has been a roiling debate since that initial announcement was made on Friday.
We will. Oh, yeah, diversity of opinion is super important to us. I mean, not all opinions. Let's not go crazy about this. But well, it's like they're admitting that MSNBC, that NBC News is the bar where the good old boys are playing in the Blues Brothers. What kind of music do you guys have? We have both kinds, country and Western. Oh, all right. Yeah, no, we have a diverse set of opinions. We have uber leftist and just this side of Hitler. What's the difference? There's no difference. It's just a matter of how things go. It is, they fired her. Instead of, now, if they had any content in their underpants in the front, instead of all their content in their underpants in the back, because it was scared out of them, they would bring Ronna McDaniel on and ask her serious questions. Ask her difficult questions. Ask her the questions that they pose to each other and then answer rhetorically. They pose them rhetorically and then answer them rhetorically constantly. It would make up 90% of what constitutes NBC News's content. Straw men. Build it up. But this time they'd have an actual person there who could answer for it. And that's what scared the hell out of them. That's what filled the content of the rear of their underpants, was the prospect that somebody would answer in a way that was not pre-approved, in a way that was not in agreement with the context of the question. That somebody could say, look, you can bring on Michael Steele all day long, and he'll sit there with a dumbass smile on his face going, yeah. Donald Trump is Hitler, Michael, as former RNC chair. What do you say about that? And, Donald Trump is Hitler. Like, that's what I thought. Michael, thank you for coming on. You've just earned your $1 million. Good job for you. Good dog. Grab a milk bone on the way out. But if you get somebody else, same with Nicole Wallace. Come in. So-and-so, person X is being considered for a possible running mate for Donald Trump. What do you think of them? Well, I think they're Nazis, Rachel. Yeah, that's what I thought. They were Nazis, too. That's good enough. And what about this other candidate? They're also Nazis. And whoever it is, they're also Nazis. Well, there's this one Republican who said that they will not vote for Donald Trump under any circumstances. Well, they might be the only one in the party who's not a Nazi. That's what I was thinking. Thank you. Riveting interview. Congratulations. See, you get their token Republicans out there, and that's the level of discourse that you get. But if you get Rhonda McDaniel out there, there's at least a possibility. Now, who knows? She could have easily maybe been housebroken just like the others, but they didn't give her the chance because they are so used to the passive Republicans there who are not Republicans at all, that they said, yeah, so Donald Trump is Hitler. What do you say? Well, he's not Hitler. He's actually blah, 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 blah. And he didn't say bloodbath. He was talking about the Chinese auto industry and the American auto. No, this is, what are you doing? You're scaring me. Chris Hayes is over in the corner crying now because he's hearing words of disagreement. This cannot work. They can't allow that. Not because their staff can't handle it, although the fact that they couldn't bring her on to give her, you know, Chuck Todd is not exactly an intellectual heavyweight, but then nobody would really think of Rhonda McDaniel as an intellectual heavyweight. But Chuck Todd would lose an IQ test against himself, right? He's just not that bright, and he's not used to it. So he doesn't want to do it anymore. He can't do it. He recognizes that there's a pretty good possibility that if he talks to somebody who would disagree with him, that he would be exposed as a fraud and a boob and a moron. He didn't want that. And apparently that's standard throughout. Nobody thought, you know what, I'll take a crack at her. Rachel Maddow, the genius, she's so smart to hear all the leftists talk about it. She's just wonderful. She's just a genius. She's such an intellectual lightweight and coward, morally and intellectually, that she could not bring on Rhonda McDaniel and decimate her, destroy her. That would be the easy. You really want to damage somebody. You really want to bolster your case. Bring somebody who disagrees with your case on, because you think that you have all the answers, and dissect them live on air. But that's not how the left works. That's not how the left can work. They are terrified, not of being exposed as frauds, but of their audience being exposed to contrary opinions, for them to hear different things. Things that are not approved by the progressive movement. So you sit there and you watch MSNBC. And this is why I tell you, every once in a while, just flip over there. It doesn't matter the time of day. Flip over there. See what they're doing. It won't be like, wow, they're talking about things differently. They're talking about different things. In some cases, there's overlap in what constitutes news and what they're talking about. But for the most part, they will talk about wildly different things than what you are used to. Because it's not a different set of opinions. It's a different world now. And they don't want, and they live in fear of their audience understanding, getting a peek into anything that doesn't conform with that worldview, because while it's unlikely, and people who have been conditioned to function, if you can call it that, uncritically, don't generally have bells and whistles going off. Wait a second, I haven't heard that before. I'm going to have to go and look that up. It could happen with some of them. They might hear something that seems a bit odd and causes them to have to go and look it up for themselves, to think for themselves. And the prospect of that scares the ever-loving post-digested food out of leftists. That's why they don't have dissenting voices on. That's why it's not because they can't handle it, although the muscles may have atrophied to the point that they can't. But it's that they have built such a tall house of cards full of their garbage lies about Russia. When Jamie Raskin is viewed as a truth teller, as an honest broker, as somebody that you really should defer to, man, he is just one of the all-time greats. When you've got Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell brought on to say things that are not only provably false, but just stupid. When they're unchallenged, it sounds great. You go, oh, as a member of Congress, they must know what they're talking about. But if you challenge, if you point out contrary to that, that's why they will play. They play a lot of Fox News clips. They're playing fewer Fox News clips now because it's getting harder to clip. But they play it out of context. That's why when they play the Donald Trump bloodbath comment, they play about 14 seconds of it. Really? You can't tell anything in 14 seconds. To give it broader context, you play 15 seconds, and then that leads somebody to maybe go, well, what was he? He said another word there about China. What was he talking about there? And then maybe they go out and investigate and see the whole thing. You can't have that. You can't risk that. The house of cards will eventually fall. It's just a matter of whether or not they seize power before it topples. That's what they're trying to fend off. Ronna McDaniel represented a threat to this. She's certainly no bastion of conservatism or intellectual heavyweight. She's a fundraising mouthpiece for the party. That's what she did. But she will have some insights and certainly some differing opinions than the drone army that is regularly on the network. They live in such fear of people being exposed. This is why it used to be, well, we'll watch Fox News so you don't have to. Now it's, we'll watch Fox News so please don't. So you won't. Please don't. Don't do it. We'll tell you how it is. Here's 5 seconds of something, and it proves they're all Nazis. And if you go over there and watch it, I believe you'll get herpes or something. They just desperately don't want the entire left-wing apparatus from Media Matters and MSNBC on down is about stopping people from seeking out contrary opinions, from looking at the other side, from listening to the other side, from seeing what the other side is talking about. Because they live in fear that if you do, then maybe, just maybe, somebody will go, well, wait a second. I didn't know that. Is that, that can't be true, is it? I'm going to go look it up. Then the whole thing starts to fall. The second people start questioning. You heard those kids at Vanderbilt. Do those people seem like they are being trained to be critical thinkers? Or do they seem like they are being trained to be neutered drones who will never question anything? The answer is pretty damned obvious, and it's also pretty damned horrifying, and that is what 90% of our media focuses on and operates under, that idea these days. We're not paying for it directly by the cable networks and the newspapers if you don't subscribe, but we're subsidizing the hell out of it. We're subsidizing the hell out of it at the university level. By the way, if you sit there and you go, well, I don't have a subscriber, read the New York Times, but I don't read the New York Times. I don't have this. I'm not going to pay for it. I agree. Don't pay for it. Don't do it. Don't do anything. But recognize that if you go to their website, they give you a few free articles a week, like, or a month. I have to go there for work purposes. But if you go there and they say, paywall, there's a paywall. Let's do, go to archive, just the word archive.is. Copy the URL and go to archive.is. Then paste that URL to whatever is behind the paywall. It won't always work. Some websites are better at stopping it than others, but I would say about 95% of the time. That'll get you around the paywall. It will, I believe it strips it of ads, so you won't, and at least it won't count as served ads to them, so you're not paying them. And you'll get the content without having to subscribe. It's a small little victory, but small little victories add up. Every little penny, you know, you see these stories, they're laying off 100 of the finest journalists. And like, where are the finest journalists? Like, okay, if they were good at their jobs, they wouldn't be laid off. But if these are the finest, then the entire industry deserves to collapse. You're looking at a situation where if a lot of people do a little, it can have a big impact. It'd be nice if, you know, a couple of people with means did a lot. But until we get there, until we have a principled version, a conservative version of George Soros, which they don't. They all just sit around and go, if I'm going to give you $10 million, what am I going to see back for that? Where George Soros goes, here's $10 million. Go run a local race for prosecutor and screw up society that way. There's no counter to that. Until we get to that point, we can at least do little things that hopefully will add up and damage the left any way we can, every way we can. So in the remaining time we have, I want to play you a couple of things. I want this misinformation academic researcher named Katie Starbird. I'm going to need to see some kind of proof that that's on a birth certificate. And Katie Starbird, not starboard like, you know, this side of the boat, starbird like a phoenix or something. She was on 60 Minutes on Saturday, and she was presented as just a nonpartisan academic interested in mis and disinformation. She's out there fighting mis and disinformation. Why? Because she's a damned hero. That's why. And it's those evil conservatives, those right-wingers, who are spreading all this mis and disinformation online. Yeah. Of course, we're not spreading mis and disinformation over the public airwaves because the left has domain over those. But it's interesting that they didn't do... first of all, let's play the way that this person was portrayed and introduced by Leslie Stahl, journalist extraordinaire.
With social media moderation teams shrinking, a new target is misinformation academic researchers who began working closely with the platforms after evidence of Russian interference online in the 2016 election. Are researchers being chilled?
Absolutely.
Kate Starbird is a professor at the University of Washington, a former professional basketball player, and a leader of a misinformation research group created ahead of the 2020 election.
We were very specifically looking at misinformation about election processes, procedures, and election results. And if we saw something about that, we would pass it along to the platforms if we thought it violated one of their policies.
Yeah, wait, who's empowering you? Mis and disinformation based on who? And let me just say, these leftists... as a polite way to put this, they always look exactly like you'd expect them to. And whatever you picture in your mind, you're probably right. Just that's what it is. But she's a misinformation academic researcher. Given that tenure is granted in academia, probably about 95% to liberals and about 5% to conservatives, provided they aren't super conservative and definitely are not opinionated, at least until they get tenure. What do you think the makeup of this former WNBA player is and her team are? Just go ahead and guess. But never mind, you don't have to, because the internet exists. So you look up this person, Katie Starbird, on Open Secrets, and you find out that this employee of the University of Washington, so you know exactly who it is, has donated to a lot of causes. Here's one little snippet. of her 2020 donations. And this is between October 17th, 2020 and December 7th, 2020. So it's not even, it's a week shy, 10 days shy, really, of 2 months. Well, she gave $250 to John Ossoff, Democrat for Senate's campaign. Now, living in Washington, why would that be? Why would you be so concerned about? Well, because she's a committed leftist. They wanted to win that election. They did. That was on the 17th. And then again on the 17th, because she just couldn't control herself, she gave another $250. Then the next day, she gave $100 two different times to Act Blue, which is the left-wing clearinghouse for political fundraising. Then 2 days after that, on October 22nd, she gave $250 to Biden Victory Fund, and then another $250 to Joe Biden for president. Super PAC, and then the Biden campaign. Wait a second, that seems weird. Why would you do? Because you've just got money to throw away. You got money to burn if you're a leftist. Then on November 27th, when it went to the runoff, another $250 for John Ossoff for Senate. Then on the 4th of December, another $250 for Ossoff for Senate. Then she probably realized that she was being a racist by not giving to Raphael Warnock for Senate in his runoff. And so on the 7th of December, she gave another $250 to him. Do you have that kind of money just throw around? If you're a non-biased, unbiased, nonpartisan researcher, just a misinformation academic researcher, you probably don't. But it doesn't matter. 60 Minutes didn't bother to look that up. 60 Minutes couldn't give a damn. They couldn't be bothered to give a damn. So they just ignore it because it's an awful lot like work, right? She's just presented as this disinterested third party, not somebody emotionally and financially invested in the fate of Democrats. In fact, didn't find any information on her giving to Republicans. It's so weird. It's almost like the whole thing is a giant, total, and complete fraud. But 60 Minutes wouldn't do that. It's 60 Minutes. It is the most prestigious news program out there, longest running. No, it's left-wingism. It metastasizes into everything. It destroys everything it touches eventually. Anything not expressly conservative will eventually be overtaken by the left and corrupted and perverted. That's just how it works. So as you watch that, as you watch it deteriorate, as you watch this whole thing spin, as you watch these people panic, know that it's because we're doing better. It's not over. Don't ever get excited. Never spike the football on the 5-yard line. But know that they are worried. And the thing that worries them the most is that somebody will get the truth out there, that somebody will tell people something they don't want them to know. Now, on the right, you give a contrary opinion. That's fine. Hear it out. I'll explain to you why it's wrong. On the left, they don't look, they're racist. You're going to believe a racist? That's not an argument. That's a distraction. You're going to believe these right wingers? That's not an answer. That's a distraction. That is a bullying talking point. It is whatever it is. None of this is by accident, ladies and gentlemen. This is who these people are. They do it deliberately. Anyway, I think that's probably about enough for today, don't you? The time just goes and goes and goes. I certainly do appreciate you listening. Thank you for listening. We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow because the stupidity never stops. Have a great one.